This is the Cato Daily Podcast for Wednesday, January 11th, 2023. I'm Caleb Brown. The United States has remained engaged with Russia's war in Ukraine, though avoiding more direct hostilities with Russia seems preferable to just about everyone. Cato's Eric Gomez discusses what the U.S. has already dispatched to help with Ukraine's defense and what hardware or U.S. demands would signal a clear escalation. We spoke Monday. Lots of people are very supportive of the efforts of Ukraine to beat back the Russian military in its attempt to just seize the country on behalf of Mother Russia. And there are a lot of Americans who believe, hey, this is probably a legitimate fight, and we are supportive of this country asserting itself and saying, no, you don't own this country. This is a separate country. You have your own country. Please go home. And yet do not want the United States to be actively involved in this protracted, now almost a year-long effort to repel the, I was going to say Soviet army, but the, and I'm sure some of the equipment is Soviet, but repel the Russian army. Where do you draw those lines for U.S. involvement? Obviously, we're already involved in a sense. We're providing equipment, small arms, and some what? What are we providing?
Oh, lots of fun things. So we're providing small arms, artillery systems, rocket artillery. Now with the latest package of deliveries, the U.S. is sending Bradley armored fighting vehicles as well. So we're in it, right? I believe up to now, the current U.S. contribution in terms of security assistance is somewhere north or close to $25 billion, which would make Ukraine a very substantial military indeed, just from the United States alone. And, you know, this is raising some questions as the war drags on of how much, how long, and to what end. In terms of the people that you mentioned that are supportive of Ukraine, but also trying to keep U.S. involvement at a level that doesn't provoke a U.S.-Russia war, is the president, right? The Biden himself has said, we don't want to get directly involved in this. We don't want, you know, U.S. soldiers in Ukraine. And we don't want to have a U.S.-NATO or a NATO-Russia conflict. And so far, that's kind of worked, right? That we've been supporting Ukraine with these defense equipment and in a way that doesn't sort of enmesh us more fully in the war itself. But as it, it's going to hit its first year late next month and near the end of February 2023. And we're kind of in this stalemate position, and it's, I don't know, I think this is going to last this way for a very long time, and the question then becomes, well, how long can the U.S. sustain what it's doing? What are our goals versus Ukrainian goals in this conflict? And if there is daylight between those goals, how does it manifest itself?
So I do want to get to some of that, but to the extent that the U.S. may enmesh itself further in this conflict, what are the pieces of equipment that would clearly signal to Russia the United States is actively involved in this war?
The Russians say we're actively involved just by sending any weapons at all.
Sure. But to the extent that we are providing weapons that can reach into Russia, that can... At that point, the U.S. seems, at least to my mind, to be more clearly involved in a proxy war with Russia.
Mm-hmm. Yes. So far, the United States has avoided sending anything to Ukraine that could be used to reach out and hit targets in Russian territory. And we have told the U.S. government has communicated to the Ukrainians, we don't want you to do that with our stuff. Right? Because the use of U.S. systems to attack targets in Russia would be a significant escalation of the war. So far, Ukraine has done some things to target stuff in Russia, not using stuff that we have provided them. It seems that way. Hard to verify that. And when Ukrainians have done things in Russian territory, the U.S. is kind of, there's been some news reporting saying U.S. officials told the Ukrainians, hey, be very careful here, right? Like, do not get us entrapped in something that we don't want to be a part of. And I think that with the Bradley sale, because that's been in the news recently, right? The sale of armored fighting vehicles, you know, quasi tank type equipment to the Ukrainians. I think that's consistent with U.S. Standing practice, right? Could they use those tanks to get into Russia? Yes. But given where the front lines are, given how the battlefield is looking, that's not going to happen anytime soon. And so I think that the U.S. is going to continue sort of walking this tightrope of saying, yes, we're going to supply Ukraine, but we're also going to not give them tools that they can use to reach into Russia. If we did start giving them that type of equipment, longer range missile systems, aircraft especially, that would be, you know, I would consider that a sort of decisive escalation of U.S. involvement in the war, in which case I would start to get very nervous about how the Russians might react to that.
What are the legitimate U.S. goals with respect to this conflict?
In my mind, I think the U.S. goals ought to be resolving this conflict in a way that gets the fighting stopped quickly. I think Ukrainian goals here are evict the Russians entirely from Ukraine, including Crimea, and imposing some sort of settlement that sort of permanently weakens Russia to the greatest extent possible, which, yeah, if I was Ukraine, I'd probably want the same thing. And I think the Russians are on the opposite end of, they want to gobble up as much as Ukrainian territory as they possibly can and sort of force the Ukrainian government to accept terms on their side. I think the U.S. as a member of this conflict, right, as an important player here, I don't know if our interests are the same as Ukraine's, in the sense that I think the process of evicting Russian forces entirely from Ukraine is going to be very costly, both for the Ukrainians and for U.S. in terms of just dollar and equipment support. It also might carry higher risks of Russia reaching for nuclear weapons and using them, in which case I think we get involved in that conflict. I don't think we can stay out anymore. I don't want to see that happen. And so I think that we need to start communicating that. And I've said this for a while now as this conflict has gone on in different venues and different places, but I do worry that what the U.S. wants and what Ukraine wants aren't the same thing. But in our sort of haste to support them, we've kind of punted on that question. And the United States has sort of let Ukraine's interests be our interests. And I don't think that is true. I don't think the American people would support anything and everything. And I think that with the election of, especially some of the recent House election, I think some of the limits of U.S. support or the limits of U.S. goals in Ukraine might start to bubble up to the surface some more and produce some difficult conversations. I think that's why Zelensky came to the United States in December, right before Christmas. I think he wanted to come have a really good visit and drum up that sort of political support, both in the White House and in Congress, to say, we're going to keep the aid flowing. We're going to keep the support flowing. Don't worry. We've got you no matter what it takes. And based off of, you know, how the visit went, I think he might have gotten it right. I think he did very well for himself. And, you know, I do wonder if that's kind of punted this difficult conversation I talked about earlier into the future.
So where do we suspect the new Congress versus Joe Biden are on having watched this conflict unfold and the sort of the trial balloons of maybe we should send more advanced, powerful weaponry to Ukraine.
So before the new Congress came in, at the end of last year, the National Defense Authorization Act, which is this big, you know, annual military authorization and sort of funding bill, it was passed by the Congress, and it included I don't remember the dollar figure off the top of my head, but it included a rather large, you know, double-digit billion sum of authorization for Biden to continue to give aid to Ukraine. So that bought him some runway, right? With that bill passed, the Biden administration can effectively send a lot more aid to Ukraine without coming back to the Congress because they've already given their approval. So it depends on how fast that aid gets used up and then where things are politically once that happens. So in terms of how it could shake out, hard to say, right? If that runway of money starts to get tapped out and battlefield conditions in Ukraine are swinging heavily in Ukraine's favor, right? It looks like they might be able to win the conflict. I think there would be a very strong debate within Congress about, you know, do we give them that last bit to win outright? I think there would be some opposition from, especially some members of the House. You saw it a bit in the McCarthy, saga for the speakership. Several Republicans wanting to, you know, put the brakes on U.S. support and not write a blank check. And if the situation is reversed and say, you know, the war remains a stalemate, or Russia somehow reverses its momentum and starts winning again, I think there might be a very real constituency within the Congress to say, look, we've given as much as we can. We're going to start putting either limits on what we can give or sort of shut off the support as a way to kind of force Ukraine to negotiate an end to the conflict, whether or not they sort of want to. So those are ways it could play out. But I think with that passage of the aid amount in the NDAA in December, the last Congress kind of gave Biden a lot of runway money wise to keep the support going, even if the, you know, new Congress might put up a few roadblocks. I will note though that in the Senate, I think that given how the elections turned out for Dems in the Senate, I think that chamber would continue to be pretty pro continuing sales to Ukraine, even if the House is more sort of skeptical now.
To the extent that the U.S. is providing more substantial hardware to Ukraine, does that give some indication that the U.S. expects this war to go on for another year or more?
I think so. So when the U.S. started giving aid to Ukraine when the war began, it was very much equipment that you could pick up and learn relatively quickly on, right? It was Stingers, which are shoulder-mounted anti-aircraft missiles, and Javelins, which are used to destroy tanks. And both of those are relatively quick to just pick up and learn. Yeah, it requires some training, but on the order of a couple days or maybe a week at max. The stuff that we're sending now, and I would include the sort of Patriot air defense system and the Bradley, both of those require much more training to learn how to use them. They also have much more substantial sustainment needs. So, you know, spare parts, fuel, equipment, upkeep and maintenance. And this has sort of been the trend line over the course of the conflict, is the stuff we're sending is getting more complex, requiring more training and being more logistically intensive to sustain. I think that shows that the U.S. thinks this war is going to go on for a long time, because, you know, you sort of wouldn't give stuff like that if you needed it to hit the battlefield right now, because it's going to take a while to get crews up to know how to use the thing. and to get maintainers to know how to repair them. Another thing from Ukraine's perspective here is not only the US, but other European countries are sending more advanced systems. Like the Germans, when the US said that we're going to send the Bradley, the Germans said that they would send their equivalent vehicle, whose name escapes me. But I think this is showing that not only the United States, but other European countries are going to start funneling more advanced and more logistically intensive systems into Ukraine, which means that Ukraine is also going to be very dependent on Western countries to keep the flow of just spare parts and that sort of sustainment equipment coming into the country. I think this is reflects a few things. Number one, like I said already, that the belief that the war is going to be quite long and going to keep dragging on. And number two, part of the US and NATO support is about moving Ukraine sort of away from older Russian equipment that it had when the war began and towards the sort of NATO Western equipment set, which, you know, helps the Ukrainian military look more like our military or the German military. But it also means that, well, the Ukrainians aren't able to really make that stuff on their own right now. And so that means they're going to be more tied into supply chains for weapon systems from the West, which raises a whole bunch of follow-on questions about, well, you know, how much and how long can the US continue to sustain, and what percentage does just sending stuff to Ukraine take up in terms of our other commitments and military interests around the world? I know that, for example, there's been some concern that maybe Taiwan could see some of its orders or its requests for US equipment get delayed or kicked down the road because some of that stuff is either being sent to Ukraine or we need to turn the supply chains towards sustaining the Ukraine fight and not supplying other partners. So that could be a whole other podcast discussion, but it is something that's interesting and an implication that I don't think many people are thinking about when it comes to these increasingly advanced systems and what it means for the long term.
Eric Gomez is a senior fellow at the Cato Institute. It is a new year. I want to thank everyone who supported the Cato Podcast sponsor program with a gift. You can do so as well, of course. It's never too late. Visit cato.org/podcast sponsor, and thank you.